Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr at scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. Today, we're going to look behind the curtain. I'm going to give you an update from Afghanistan, from Kabul in real time, because I've been on the phone most of the night with friends and contacts in Kabul and around Afghanistan. I spent over a decade working in and out of Afghanistan, Pakistan, and I understand the situation in that country, I believe, better than most, not because I'm smart, but because I actually lived and worked there. I didn't rotate through for 2 to 3 months, but I spent the better part of a decade traveling and working in that country. And I want to read you something. The Taliban have continued to fight since their 29 February 2020 deal. And in October, have further ratcheted up the violence. One partial count shows 14,000 Afghans killed so far this year. In October, the Taliban have launched a major offensive against the Helmand province and dozens of districts around the country. They have tightened their siege of the cities, conducted suicide bombings, overrun security posts, detonated IEDs, and arbitrarily detained wayfarers and conducted targeted killings. The current Taliban approach to violence is to apply maximum pressure against the Afghan government in readiness to grab Kabul and the rest in the spring of 2021. Special Envoy Khalilzad asserts that his engagement with the Taliban in Qatar has persuaded them to reduce violence. Our assessment is that instead, the Taliban have calibrated their violence, achieving the maximum possible progress against the government without completely shredding their deal with the U.S. This is just one of dozens of reports that was sent to our intelligence services and the Pentagon. This is not a surprise to them, because this report was written over a year ago. And we monitored everything that was going on. We told them over and over again, the Taliban are not listening to Ambassador Khalilzad's deal. They are continuing violence. They are talking out of both sides of their mouth. We went on to send reports showing in great detail how the Taliban were being supported by the Pakistanis through the ISI and also by Iran through the IRGC, the Republican Guard in Iran, and they were developing Fatayoun brigades, the same brigades from Iran that worked in Iraq and were in charge of IEDs and killing our soldiers. This is the state of play. As our leaders say, we didn't see this coming. As our leaders say, everything was fine. It was never fine. And they knew better. They chose not to pay attention. I'm not going to read from every one of our reports, but I will tell you that we knew what was happening in the United States of America, and there was also a way forward that our betters chose not to pursue. Another report we spoke about, the systematic exploiting of uncertainty created by the latest Taliban offensive. and how the IRGC, the Iranian Republican Guard, are presenting themselves to any anti-Taliban figures who will listen. So they're trying to insert themselves to the Iran. They worked with anti-Taliban and Taliban figures through cutouts. We tried to warn them. We tried to warn them with it. We told them a Taliban were preparing a major offensive. We told them that in February of this year, because there was a security vacuum that had been led by our drawdown and our lack of support for the Afghan troops, or making sure that they got the money directly. We talked about how the Taliban were continuing to buy weapons and getting them through the private sector. We talked about it, meaning we passed this off, but nothing was done. We talked about the influx of Al-Qaeda foreign fighters, and we gave actual names and locations of these foreign fighters, yet, to my understanding, nothing was done. We talked about Khalifa Siraj Haqqani, who we have a $5 million bounty on, how he boasted in a speech back in February. It was actually online, open source, that the Taliban had just acquired drone technology, and he used this to cite evidence of their growing strength. We reported the Taliban were receiving training in drone technology. We reported a lot of things, yet nothing was done. Nothing was done. Or one of our most recent reports, we explained how the Taliban had annual resources available to them in excess of $1 billion through opium cultivation, NGO and contractor contributions, basically 10% of the contracts they estimate were going to the Taliban, general commercial enterprises or fees levied on the activities. The Taliban was getting money from the telecommunication companies by fees levied on the GSM network. They were also exploiting the mines, quarries, and real earth minerals. And the electricity bills from the provinces where there is an extensive grid that the Taliban collect charges on the rural population, a bark or tax. All this time, and this report was just over a week ago, when everyone said the Taliban was moving to have a newer image, they pulled Shafika Hydri off a bus. This is a young lady in her 20s who only wanted to make Afghanistan better for women. She had gone and spoken on women's issues. And for that crime, Taliban intelligence targeted her. They knew she was taking a bus to Mazar. They stopped the bus. They took her off in Kuala Nau and summarily executed her on the side of the road and left her body. Her sole crime, a young civil society activist. In fact, she was wearing the burqa over her shirt and jeans when they executed her. That's who we're dealing with. That's who's in the capital now of Afghanistan, with roughly 30 to 40,000 American citizens, by my understanding. It may be as little as 10, it may be as much as 40. We don't have exact numbers because our own U.S. government says we're not sure how many people are there. But they're there. And even though we control the airport by all reports, and I know we do, people can't get to the airport because the Taliban control the city. And you would think that we would understand the situation and be working to rectify it. And I believe that there are good officers on the ground there that understand the situation and are working to rectify it. But what does the world see right now? Well, I think the world sees someone like Press Secretary of the Pentagon, John Kirby. I believe he's Press Secretary of the Pentagon. When he came out with this statement this past Saturday, and he said this,
You know, we're flowing these forces in to help the State Department reduce their footprint, but there's no intention right now to close the embassy or to close all the diplomatic presence in Kabul. We still want to be able to have that in place. And as Clarissa reported just a few minutes ago, the situation in Kabul is calm right now. Yes, there's unease. Yes, there's uncertainty, and we understand that. But as we look at it from a military perspective, the city itself, as you and I speak, is not under an imminent threat of collapse at this point. But obviously, we're watching this closely. We wouldn't have made this decision to send in another 3,000 troops if we weren't mindful of the deteriorating security situation there.
So he said on Saturday that the city wasn't in imminent collapse. It wasn't in that position that they would collapse, but they were mindful of the security situation. Now, I could read you the reports we sent last week telling them that it was going to collapse. But less than 12 hours after he made that statement, the city of Kabul fell. And I think if it collapses within 12 hours, actually, I think it was more like 6 hours of his talk, then that's imminent collapse to me. And he says the military says it's not. And I can tell you that that Saturday, and you can look, Google this and look it up, several news reports said intelligence officials report that it is at least 90 days before the Taliban could reach and take Kabul. Those were our professional intelligence reports from the intelligence services put out over the mainstream media. Yet I know they had more. My question is, why did they put that out? Because there's only two answers. It's sheer incompetence, or it's malfeasance, and neither one of those can be a part of the greatest nation in the world. But not to be outdone by the Pentagon, after the Taliban had taken over the capital, UN spokesperson Ned Price went to the podium to reassure the world, and this is what he had to say.
Additionally, the UN Security Council issued a joint press statement earlier today calling for a new government that is united, inclusive, and representative, including with the full and meaningful participation of women. The Council spoke with one voice to underscore that Afghanistan must abide by its international obligations, including to international humanitarian law, and ensure the safety and security of all Afghans and international citizens.
Yep. There's nothing more powerful than a strongly worded letter from the UN Security Council to make despots, to make tyrannical regimes just tremble in fear and say, oh, I guess we got it all wrong. I guess the guys that killed Shafika didn't get the memo. I guess the guys that just pulled one of our interpreter's families, his cousin, out of the airport, executed him thinking it was his brother. I guess they didn't get the memo. This just happened the other day. You see, when you have people that are unmoored from morality and part of a tyrannical cult, because that's what the Taliban are. They're not the good. I have a lot of friends that are Muslim, and they're not the good folks that worship peacefully. These are a radical group of terrorists. In fact, they're killing fellow Muslims, you know, all in the name of Allah. And they want to bring a caliphate or a rule to a country that doesn't really want it. They just want to be left alone. And they could settle out things for themselves, but unfortunately, I think a lot of things have gotten in the way. Not the U.S., just personal agendas from folks in positions of power. People that want to sell equipment, people that want to have fat NGO contracts where the money never quite gets to the intended target, but usually makes it somewhere in between. We know for a fact President Ghani left Afghanistan with suitcases full of cash. He took care of himself. Now, there are strong leaders in that country that are in hiding or working in areas like the Panjshir to ensure that they can keep some sort of semblance of the Afghan government alive. But All we did was play Groundhog Day for 20 years. We continued to send troops in year after year, and our generals and leaders failed miserably. Our intelligence services failed miserably, and we have to call it for what it is. Back in World War II, when a leader failed, they were fired, replaced with someone who would get the job done. So how come we have fallen so far from that? We have generals like General Milley, who should resign from the Joint Chiefs in disgrace, but he will double down and tell us everything's fine. Just ask the Pentagon spokesperson. He'll tell us there's no problem here while he slow drips troops into Afghanistan, not understanding the gravity of the situation. Let me sum it up quite clearly. It took 20 years, four presidents, and trillions of dollars to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. Countless Americans have lost friends and loved ones during this conflict. I've lost a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends that will never be the same, whether physically or mentally, ever again. And I'm not unique in this. My brothers know what I'm talking about. But as you, the American citizens, sit there in the comfort of your own home, as we stress over mass mandates, social distancing, and a government that appears unmoored from truth, reality, history, and experience, think about those that sign up for the military, that signed up to work in intelligence, that believed in the mission and were betrayed by their leaders, who believe only in ambition and the movement of their career in a dysfunctional bureaucratic organization. The truth hurts, but we have to bring sunlight to the situation. We have to recognize that we have failed as a group in the intelligence services and in the military. And the Afghan campaign is not a participation trophy, but a black wreath, a reminder of how far we've fallen. So what do we do now? I don't always like to say, hey, we suck, without saying there's a way forward, and there is. The way forward is for every American to recognize that there's a problem. There's a problem with our military leaders, not our actual warfighters, but the leadership. There's a problem when we have generals in the highest position of authority, like General Austin, who's the Secretary of Defense, or General Milley, who's the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who, from my understanding, and I have pretty good sources on this, when they were colonels, they were passed over for promotion twice. And anyone in the military understands if you're passed over for promotion twice, you're non-promotable and you're to retire. But somehow their careers were revived during the Obama administration. And I have a lot of inside baseball on this. And I will tell you, when President Trump was president, I'm not blaming him as commander in chief. I think his subordinates failed him miserably. I think the information was passed. I think there were some good people that the information was passed to. But somewhere in the machine, the information, some of that I just told you, wasn't brought forth to the decision makers. It was stovepiped. It was wadded up and thrown in the file of, we'll get to it if we need it. It may have been put in the file of, we can't do this because it would take too much work. It may have been stuck in that filing cabinet that says, how will this affect my career? Will I get a job with a Fortune 500 company with a plane, a ranch, and a board position that sets me for life as long as I facilitate government contracts? It might have been thrown in that file. I don't know. But what I do know is that we are the greatest nation in the world, and we will not remain that way unless we do a serious hot wash of the current situation and understand why we failed in Afghanistan. because it wasn't that we didn't have the equipment and the desire and the troops. It was a failure of leadership, full stop. I'll never forget Baba T and I one time. We had been out in the sticks, and we had to come on the base. We just wanted to get a good meal and resupply. So we got on this base, and I will never forget it. We were told we had to empty the magazines and our weapons because they didn't want an accidental discharge on a forward operating base. Think about that for a second. You're in a forward operating base at war, and they want you to take your magazine out and empty your weapon because they don't want an accidental discharge. You can imagine how much we complied with that one. I'll never forget, after we went through that kabuki dance, we're on base, and someone stops our truck, and some fresh butter bar lieutenant comes out and says, "Where's your wheel walker?" You see, on a military base, sometimes they will have you have a wheel walker, meaning you have to have one guy walk next to the car, and the car can go no faster or the truck than the person walking. Therefore, that prevents any potential accidents or mishaps on base. And this is a war zone. Where's your wheel walker? I'll never forget looking at my buddy Baba Tim, and I had no words. And he said, "Bro, it's very simple. When you don't have anything important to do, the unimportant becomes important." And the unimportant becoming important is one of the reasons, and I think one of the primary reasons, we failed in Afghanistan, because we didn't have a defined mission. Go in, kick butt, and exit. We went in, we developed big box FOBs, forward operating bases, and lots of contract dollars flowed. And now, 20 years later, 20 years after the same repeated failed plan, which included only in the calculus money and men to be successful. That was the calculus, how much money and how much men each year. We leave Afghanistan, not as people that came, accomplished a mission and made it better, but as a country that is haphazardly trying to get its citizens and those that helped us, our allies, out, while the Taliban sit there and watch us. And I believe the reason they're watching us and not attacking us is I'm sure we're making concessions and paying them. I can't prove that, but why not? I don't think they're there doing this for fun. I do know that they have a lot of our equipment. Every picture you see on the internet, they're carrying an American weapon with American optics, including our infrared optics, on their battle rifles. On our battle rifles, they're holding, yeah, that's a thing. I have a good report from a buddy of mine who lives on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan of three flatbed trucks carrying our heavy battle vehicles into Pakistan so that they can be taken apart, most likely, and re-engineered by our folks that aren't big fans of us. I'm guessing Russia, China, you know. But they have to take them into Pakistan to get them to those countries. So they're crossing. They've already crossed the Torkham border. My question is, why did we leave them? Or why didn't we disable them? Or why didn't we just blow them up? The problem is we have more questions than answers, and we have an administration that has lost the trust of the American people. Joe Biden's poll numbers are now underwater, and I believe they'll sink to the bottom of the Marianas Trench. And it's our fault. We as Americans, both Democrat and Republican, have allowed ourselves to be governed by men driven by ambition, and they haven't been held to the constitutional principles that has made this nation great. They are immoral. They are unmoored from any type of leadership through principle. And the only leadership they provide allows them to lead their careers to their prosperity and not the security of our nation. And that's where we find ourselves today. The unimportant has become important because they can be successful doing the small things and they don't have to risk doing the big things that give us said victory. So today I'd like to make a statement. It's time for us not to be comfortable in America anymore. Most of you aren't comfortable emotionally, but I'm talking all the way around. It's time to start getting uncomfortable and paying attention to what's going on. It's time to engage and see past the mainstream media into the leadership, or at least the people in name only that are leaders, that are running this nation. Do it peacefully, but with great deliberation. Look at what's going on and realize that in 2022, we have to make changes, not only in leadership, but we have to elect people that will unequivocally shrink the size of this government, that will unequivocally hold leadership in the intelligence services and military responsible. They will fire those that don't produce and promote those that do. It's not about making a mistake. Those will be made. It's about accomplishing the mission and learning from the mistakes that you make. Currently, we have no accountability in our leadership. The only people that are held accountable are those that, I guess, don't wear masks and don't want to be vaccinated. And we've gone down that rabbit hole. And I would like to add that all you watching Afghanistan see the masses of people trying to get in the airport, the masses that are crowded on planes. And you notice no one's wearing a mask. No one's checking a vax card. And I work at several hospitals there. I talked to doctors in Afghanistan. I said, how's your COVID condition? And they said that we're fine. You know, people got sick. We got immunity and we're fine. We don't have time. We're too poor to worry about COVID. But the hospitals aren't clogged with those patients. They're just clogged here with people that have managed the United States just as poorly as they managed the Afghan war. And while the Afghan war was a harbinger of what was to come, we didn't pay attention to it. And now we are suffering from the same said lack of leadership in our nation. So it's a time to stand. It's a time to demand more from our leadership, more accountability. I would rather someone make a mistake moving in the direction of freedom than to be flawless while they cruise down the road to tyranny. Thanks for spending some time with me this morning. I'm going to bring on some more guests to give you an update of the situation. We'll go back to the mask mandates and the vaccine and other things, but it's important that you understand how we got to Afghanistan so that we prevent the same thing from happening there and here as far as leadership decisions. Pray for those there. We're working overtime. I'm up most of the night trying to help people get out, setting it up. And I will tell you, pray for the leaders on the ground there, the generals on the ground there, the admiral on the ground there, and their troops. These men are doing a great job. I doubt they're getting much leadership from Washington, D.C., but these guys are the guys on the ground, and they're making good decisions. Pray they continue. Pray for all the people stuck in Afghanistan, the families that are cowering with their newborn babies, praying that they're not executed and that they can get to the airport. Write your senators and congressmen and tell them we leave no one behind. Go out and have a good rest of the day and pray that those in Afghanistan can get out and help the United States to keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey your secret safe with the NSA. In God we trust or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
With Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.